crew and everyone here, and used some of the actual locations of where the story takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy who plays Carl is quite good. Montgomery Clift, in my humble opinion, is always watchable, and beyond that, he's really quite something. And this is a story of the boy and his survival and something beyond his survival. And you can find this movie, and it's out there, and you should really give it a look. It's quite well done.
And what was the title of that again, Mike?
The Search.
The Search. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. And about when was that one made? 48, you said?
1948.
48. Okay. So, awesome. Sounds good. So we got Gifted is you could watch it if you feel inclined. Gold, stay away from unless you got nothing better to do. And The Search is Mike's pick of the week. Awesome, as always. All right, we'll touch base with you in about 2 weeks. Appreciate it as always, and have a great week.
Thanks, you too.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye.
Mike at the Movies, good friend of mine, giving you 3 movies. Gifted in the theaters. You can watch that one. Matthew McConaughey's Gold, not so good. And The Search with Montgomery Clift is Mike's pick of the week. Check those all out. So Mike's trying to save you some cash if you're going to go and invest in purchasing gold. All right, we're at a break point. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back right after the news and weather with my special guests. You're listening to Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
We're going to get this passed through the Senate. I feel so confident.
President Trump referring to the revived Republican health care bill that narrowly passed the U.S. House yesterday, 217 to 213. This senator says,
Mr. President, I'm sorry to disappoint you. This bill, in its current form, is not getting through the Senate. No way.
Senator Bernie Sanders is asked on CNN last night what the Senate should do with the bill.
You take this bill and you, now we don't want to clog up toilets or anything, but you just toss it into a garbage can and you start again.
Many Senate Republicans are also skeptical about this bill. The Justice Department's now launching a criminal investigation into allegations Uber used a software tool to help its drivers avoid regulators in places where it wasn't supposed to be operating. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, remember a couple years ago when we thought we'd save some money with do-it-yourself window coverings?
Unfortunately, yes. I measured.
I ordered.
We both installed. What a disaster.
All the way around. And we're pretty good at do-it-yourself. But obviously, window coverings really call for a pro.
A pro from Budget Blinds.
They're the do-it-for-me people. They bring the store to you, come in and measure, then install it all.
And that style and service for every budget thing they talk about? Turns out it's for real.
Right. Budget Blinds has no surprises pricing and a no questions asked warranty. The best in the business.
That's a no-brainer.
And this spring, you could get up to $500 off on Signature Series window coverings.
Save money and your dignity. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS.
Or go online to budgetblinds.com.
855-BUDGET-BLINDS or budgetblinds.com. Forget do-it-yourself.
Get an expert to do it for you at a price that fits your budget. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS now.
Offer good on selected products at participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Some restrictions may apply. Ask for details.
The head of a major tech company is taking aim at President Trump's H-1B visa proposal. Here's Mark Mayfield.
The head of Google's parent company says Trump's proposed visa restrictions on skilled workers is the stupidest policy in the entire American political system. The executive chairman of Alphabet, Eric Schmidt, spoke Wednesday at the MIT Artificial Intelligence Lab in Massachusetts. Schmidt said the proposed restrictions of H-1B visas for skilled foreign workers could hamper the competitiveness of American firms. He said, "We want the best people in the world, and that the U.S. should be organized to be the most attractive place for those people."
Storms are literally pouring more water on parts of the Midwest already dealing with devastating flooding. Rivers in Missouri, Illinois, Oklahoma, and Arkansas rising to record levels. 5 people dead from the flooding in Missouri. This weather could also affect tomorrow's running of horse racings. The weather could also affect the first leg of horse racing. Racing's Triple Crown tomorrow as the 143rd Kentucky Derby's to be run at Churchill Downs. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems, and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter... Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll-free, 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
A widow in a same-sex marriage is suing a Mississippi funeral home for allegedly refusing to cremate his husband. The lawsuit claims the Picayune Funeral Home refused to carry out pre-made arrangements after the death of Robert Husky last year because he was gay. Court documents allege the funeral home in Pearl River County said it didn't deal with their kind. In a statement this week, the widow, John Zadowski, said, quote, "No one should be put through what we've been put through, the lawsuit demanding a jury trial, and it seeks to recover damages." However, the funeral home is calling the claims absolutely false. A police motorcade will be escorting El Chapo, the drug lord, to court this morning in New York City, as we hear from Scott Pringle.
El Chapo's lawyers once again expected to beg the judge to ease the Mexican drug lord's prison restrictions. They've complained they can't get certain personnel to see him to build a proper defense, and he can't see his wife. Now, a judge did rule yesterday that Guzman can communicate with his wife through screened messages only, but also ruled he must remain in solitary confinement. El Chapo is accused of running a multi-billion-dollar international drug trafficking operation.
And Vice President Mike Pence praising the contributions made by the Hispanic community in America. As Cinco de Mayo's arrived, the Vice President hosting a Cinco de Mayo event at the White House last night on the eve of the actual holiday. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
This is Big C coming to you from HuntingtonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Huntington County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Huntington kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Huntington County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., on Good Morning Huntington, HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
Well, good afternoon, Friday, Cinco de Mayo, and this is a special holiday in Mexico, and actually, although now it's a big celebration, if you talk to historians like my husband, they would tell you why. But basically, it was the victory over the French, as I recall. So that goes way back into the 1800s. So one of these days, maybe I'll actually have my husband in to explain some of these holidays that all we think of is celebrations and how they started. But in any event, let's start with the weather. I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney. The program It's the Law. And today I just wanted to bring you some information about the weather. If you haven't been outside, you're lucky because it's feels a lot colder than 64 degrees. It was supposed to be the high for today. But it's been raining and, you know, everybody who would turn their heat off probably, if they haven't turned it back on, are thinking about it. Tonight, again, we're going to have about an 80% chance of showers. And tomorrow, showers likely, again, about 80%, high about 64 degrees, but that doesn't mean much when it's raining and windy and, you know, just nasty out there. Again, tomorrow night, 60% chance of showers and then slight chance of showers later on. But again, there's a chance of showers on Sunday. Believe it or not, that may be the best day, but still doesn't look good. Into Sunday night, again, a chance of showers, and then partly sunny on Monday. So for those of you who have Mondays off, you're going to be lucky to work the weekend. For the rest of us, not a great weekend to be working outside, but still one last weekend to get everything else done. So I'm going to tell you, give you a couple spots from our sponsors, and then we'll be back and talk about the legal news.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Huntington County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Well, we're back. It's the Law. Today I'm going to talk about some of the legal news and cases in the that have been decided this week. First of all, in New Jersey, one of the things that professionals cannot do is have mixed practices. And the New Jersey Supreme Court ruled on Thursday, meaning yesterday, that a New York healthcare lawyer and a California chiropractor violated the state's Insurance Fraud Prevention Act when they helped a local chiropractor set up a multidisciplinary practice. So anyone out there who is in the health field, be very careful if you're trying to set up practices with non-medical people. Same thing with attorneys. We cannot set up a legal practice and be a partnership with non-lawyers. And attorneys get in trouble for that, big trouble. And, for example, if someone is hiring someone to, it comes up in personal injury where there could be people who solicit business for a personal injury attorney, i.e. the automobile accidents. The attorneys cannot have a partnership with someone who is doing that part of the business. They can have partnerships, of course, with other attorneys, but not with non-attorneys. So this came down this week on a healthcare lawyer and a California chiropractor. So the, there's a lot of controversy and a lot of discussion with respect to the new Bail Reform Act and what prosecutors have to do. And of course, bail bondsmen have been literally put out of business, or almost so. So there's also court director shares the bail statistics and also urged a funding change. And this was at the budget hearing on Thursday. The administrative head of the New Jersey court system touted the state's bail reform system as a success, but urged changes on how it is funded. So that we shall see what happens there. Well, there are some international discussions between law firms in New Jersey and international firms, which probably not much interest to most people. They call it the gig economy, G-I-G economy. That is the business environment in which goods and services are provided on an, quote, as needed, end quote, or, quote, on-demand, end quote, basis, has indisputably changed the American workforce, sparking vigorous debate about its impact as well as governmental and legal activity, so that this would be of interest only to people who probably are, in fact, producing things on demand or companies that are buying things as needed. And certainly I know it's changed a lot of industries, and you wouldn't think that if you took a look at all the car dealerships around and all the cars that are sitting in automobile dealerships' lots. But that seems to be one industry where it has not happened. But certainly in other industries it is. For example, a company like John Deere, they may order certain parts from a company, and that company isn't going to have them on hand. They're not going to stockpile them. They're going to produce them as they get the orders. So it has changed the businesses a lot. There's a lot less inventory in a lot of businesses today. So what else is happening? Well, drug makers face suits linking diabetes medication, AstraZeneca, and Bristol Myers were hit with 14 lawsuits in the District of New Jersey this week, claiming the users of the diabetes drug Saxagliptin, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that, Saxagliptin, they face elevated risks of heart failure as a result of using the drug. I mean, that will be really very significant if, in fact, it's proven. So this anyone taking that drug should be you know, checking it out with their physician, obviously. So that now a new state law in New Jersey, and some people will agree and some won't, but Governor Christie signed legislation that was spurred by a federal civil rights lawsuit, and that will require insurance carriers contracting with the state to cover fertility treatments to women in same-sex relationships, just as those in non-traditional relationships, in other non-traditional relationships, I guess I should say. So it's not only going to be married women in heterosexual relationships any longer. That would be covered. And, of course, this is significant because it's a significant expense. Fertility drugs are fertility problems are significant medical expenses. And so the issue is if they're being covered for some women, if they're being covered for married women in heterosexual relationships, why not married women in same-sex relationships? And all of these things, of course, are significant issues. And the issue in a same-sex couple might be somewhat different, but in fact, women in those relationships don't want to go out and have sex with a man just to get pregnant. So they are opting for fertility. Now, unfortunately, there was a New Jersey judge facing ethics charges for alleging or for allegedly becoming involved in a family friend's custody case. And one of the things, and actually that's surprising news that a judge would do that. I don't know the particulars, but it is, our judges are very, very careful to stay away from any involvement. In fact, they are very, they can't do so many things once somebody is a sitting judge. And they have a judicial code of conduct, just as attorneys have a professional responsibility, code of professional responsibility. And there are many things that judges cannot do and are not permitted to do, or even seemingly very innocent things, they have to get permission before they can do them. Now, in a case of deportation, there's a real issue of how New Jersey's undocumented immigrants can provide for their citizen children if they are in fact deported. And as emphasis is placed on the expanding the nation's immigration laws, the threat of deportation looms for a growing number of undocumented immigrants across the United States, as here in New Jersey. And of course, many of these people have children born in the United States. And if you're born in the United States, you're a United States citizen. As well, you should be. Any question that this is not the case, I'll debate that any time. I had a child born in another country, and what happens, it depends on the citizenship laws, but I don't know of a country that does not grant citizenship on a child born in that country. And in fact, in our case, because both my husband and I are U.S. citizens and were U.S. citizens at the time, when our daughter was born in Guatemala, she is both a Guatemalan citizen because of her birth, and she is a U.S. citizen because both of us are U.S. citizens. Of course, it has caused many problems for her. I shouldn't say problems. Some of it has been rather interesting. For example, when she went to try to get a driver's license and came in with her Guatemalan birth certificate, because, of course, she has a Guatemalan birth certificate, and they wanted to have her citizenship papers and her, you know, all kinds of other information. They wanted her green card, for example. Well, of course, she didn't have a green card because she's a U.S. citizen. But in any event, this is a serious problem, and undocumented people in this country are very concerned as to what will happen. And in fact, another personal anecdote, my daughter works for DCPMP, and in fact that has been, is becoming a problem because what happens to these children when parents are deported, obviously, you know, if the children don't go with the parents or the parents are deported and their children aren't with them when they're picked up, these children will be now have to be in foster care homes, and if they can't find relatives, and of course the problem is if they find relatives who are also undocumented, it's creating a fairly serious problem, and it will only expand. But that I know there are different views on whether or not undocumented immigrants should be able to stay in this country, and of course what we do know is that for some people it's fairly easy to get the ability to stay here. In fact, they come here legally under H-1 visas because the companies indicate that they need these workers and they can't find U.S. Citizens to take the jobs. So that's another issue, but that is an issue because the people that are coming here under H-1 visas are obviously talented, educated, and usually are here to do the jobs that they can't find someone, or at least sometimes, to be honest, it's because they can find foreign workers who are going to be paid less. But in the event that this becomes a greater problem, there's going to have to be more money paid by the state to keep children in foster care, because they do have the right to be here. They're United States citizens. So there's a criminal case that was published, and State versus Randolph. In this case, the appellate division found that the defendant had an automatic standing to challenge the search of the apartment because he was charged with possessing drugs and possessory drug offenses, and because the state failed to show that the apartment was abandoned or that the defendant was a trespasser, they needed a search warrant. And so they, you know, that was the problem here. And failing to issue the search warrant, in this case, the mere presence charge was harmless error. So don't know much about that case other than the defendant did have the standing to challenge the search of the apartment. Now, whether that proved whether he won or not, that's a different question, but he certainly had the right to challenge that. Now, there's a civil rights in the Third Circuit case that was decided, and that was the plaintiff appeal from the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of the defendants. So now, of course, the district court, federal court, the trial court is called the district court, and then an appeal is taken to the Third Circuit. And in this case, the plaintiff was a pretrial detainee at the Middlesex County Adult Correction Center. And during his detention, there was the officials at the correction center received credible information that he was involved in a scheme with a bail bond service. And that was the bail bond service was Speedy Bail Bonds. And the allegation is that the plaintiff coerced other detainees at the correction center to use Speedy in exchange for the plaintiff receiving some form of compensation. So after advising the plaintiff of the allegations against him, the correction center placed the plaintiff in administrative segregation while they investigated. And his telephone privileges were restricted to legal calls only. And the plaintiff then filed suit against the defendants, alleging that they violated his due process rights when they transferred him to administrative segregation and restricted his telephone privileges. and he said that interfered with his ability to obtain a cosigner for his only for his own bail. In other words, he needed to post bail, and he said that what they did to him limited his ability to obtain a cosigner for his own bail. Now, the district court granted the defendants, the correction center, summary judgment, and the district court ruled that they did not violate plaintiff's procedural or substantive rights under the due process clause of the 14th Amendment by sending him into, you know, restricting his telephone calls and putting him into administrative segregation. Now, he appealed, and on appeal, the court agreed and affirmed summary judgment. And the appellate court first rejected his assertion that his substantive due process rights were violated with respect to his liberty interests in remaining in the general population. So he said he had the right under the 14th Amendment to remain in the general population, and also that he had the right to telephone privileges. And they also held that substantive due process claims did not rise from a state-created liberty interests. Now, they did agree that the plaintiff had constitutionally protected liberty interests in exercising his bail option and in remaining free from punishment prior to adjudication of guilt. It found that he was not deprived of those interests since he was permitted to contact his attorney to arrange for bail and to contact other people through mail. So only his telephone restrictions were curtailed, not his ability to send letters. And also, they said because transfer to administrative segregation did not constitute punishment. And then finally, the appellate court held that the plaintiff was not denied procedural due process rights since he was given notice of his transfer and an interview with the officials before he was transferred. So basically, the trial court, in this case the federal district court, the decision for summary judgment on behalf of the institution was in fact upheld. Now, there was an insurance law case, and this was Allstate Insurance Company versus Northfield Medical Center. And this was a Supreme Court case. And the opinion was written by Justice LaVecchia. And in this case, the defendants extensively promoted a professional practice structure that a fact finder could reasonably conclude was little more than a sham intended to evade well-established prohibitions and restrictions governing ownership and control of a medical practice by a non-doctor. I just had mentioned that earlier, that in New Jersey that's not permitted. And in light of the broad anti-fraud liability imposed under the statute holding defendants responsible for promoting and assisting in the formation of an ineligible medical practice was not a novel application of the statute. The trial court correctly applied a plain language understanding of knowing, that's quote, knowingly, and its finding of knowing violation of the statute is amply supported by the record. So that was Judge LaVecchia's. She wrote the opinion. Again, this was the fact that in New Jersey, a non-medical doctor cannot own a medical practice. And same thing, as I had said, with a legal practice, a law practice. I cannot establish a law practice with a non-lawyer. So I'm going to give you a couple spots from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with more of the legal news.
Ready to start your child's entrepreneurial adventure? Join us for this exclusive entrepreneurial learning event featuring the award-winning game Launch. Limited to just 40 kids in the 4th through 8th grade. Friday, May 12th from 6 to 9 at the Deer Path YMCA, Woods Church Road in Flemington. Register online at huntertonchamber.org.
3, 2, 1.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Okay, we're back. It's Friday, Cinco de Mayo, and I'm Pat Smits, and we're talking about some of the legal news. There was a case this week. I wish my friend Bill Wolfson was in the room so I could discuss this, because not only does Bill handle bankruptcy, but he handles foreclosure matters. And frankly, anyone who may be risking foreclosure or intent to foreclose or really needs to talk to an attorney. And Bill is great. Whenever I have any issues with clients, I certainly get him involved in the case. But in this case, this was a city mortgage. It was not a published case, which means that no one can use it as precedent. But what happened here is the parties, meaning the defendants, executed a note secured by their real property, their real estate. And then they subsequently entered into a loan modification, modifying the repayment terms of their mortgage and the maturity date. And a few months later, they defaulted on the terms modifying the repayment. And so they defaulted, meaning they didn't comply with the agreement that they had reached. So in this case, they initially had a note, or actually note secured by their property, which is a mortgage against the property. And then they obviously had some problems with it, so they entered into a loan modification, which, although I don't know the specifics, it modified the repayment terms and the maturity date of their original loan. Unfortunately, they defaulted on those terms of the agreement. So they had an agreement, then they didn't pay pursuant to the terms. So then the bank, City Mortgage, commenced a foreclosure action following the default, and they default on the modification agreement. And they successfully, meaning the bank successfully moved for the dismissal of the party's counterclaims. So there were counterclaims, and they moved and they were dismissed. So then again, the bank moved for and was granted summary judgment, and they also were able to strike the party's answer and affirmative defenses. So the court thereafter entered a final judgment of foreclosure. Now, on appeal, the parties, the defendants in the original case, named Jakes, argued that the appellate court had plenary review authority to reverse the trial court's decision. So, what the trial court had done is dismiss the counterclaims. And so what they asked the appellate court to do is to review and reverse the trial court's decision to dismiss the counterclaims. And that they also said there existed a genuine issue of material fact precluding summary judgment, standing, and unclean hands. Now, in this case, the appellate division affirmed the judgment of the trial court, holding that the respondent, City Mortgage, and they were the successor of the original lender, they had established standing through the party's modification agreement. So once the party signed the modification agreement, then Citibank had standing, and also the court further held that the additional remaining claims on appeal lacked merit. And so they affirmed the entry of the final judgment of foreclosure. As I said, very important to get good legal advice in cases like that. And, of course, if someone is lucky enough to get a mortgage modification, they have to comply with the terms of that agreement. And pretty foolish to enter into agreement if you're not going to comply with the terms, or if you're not able to comply with the terms. And this doesn't mean that the banks are, I won't even talk about some of these banks because it's really, really unfortunate what they're doing, and has been a real problem since so many homes are underwater now, and people would like to stay in their homes, but they really do need a reasonable modification of the mortgages, especially because if these houses are foreclosed upon, the bank's not going to be able to get their money back. Nobody's going to pay more than a house is worth fair market value now. And also, so many of these homes, by the time they go into foreclosure, really have significant problems because nobody has kept them up for years. So anyway, what else is happening? Well, there's a $25 million Accutane verdict that was tossed out because of expert testimony limits. And in this case, the appellate division tossed a $25 million verdict against Hoffman LaRoche in a suit over acne drug Accutane after finding that the trial judge improperly restricted duplicative testimony from two defense experts. In other words, there were two defense experts, and the trial judge said, "No, you're just duplicating the testimony of the first witness, expert witness. So I'm not going to allow you to testify." And in this case, the appellate court said, "No, the trial judge should have allowed both experts to testify." And the turnpike is not liable for a fatal parkway accident when a tree fell. And that was the states of a man and his mother who were killed when a tree fell on their car while they were traveling on the Garden State Parkway, cannot sue the highway's operator. And so that even though it would have been the fault of the turnpike, apparently under this case, they're not able to sue them. Now, a New Jersey panel that resolves disputes over the cost of legislation between local governments and the state has rejected a complaint claiming that the state's recently enacted bail reform system is unconstitutional. So there was, that has been upheld. And that is a panel that apparently there's a special panel resolving those disputes. Now, the United States rap music star Eminem took New Zealand's ruling. Apparently, New Zealand ruled the National Party to court on Monday, claiming in a suit that it had no right to use his hit song, Lose Yourself, in a 2014 campaign commercials. So this is going to be a fight over songs used in political campaigns. There was another criminal law, a case approved for publication this week, and that is that the plain rule. Now, we have statutes in New Jersey that are enacted by the legislature. We also have procedural rules that are approved by the Supreme Court. In fact, those of us who are attorneys have a thick rule book on procedural rules. There are also evidence rules, rules of evidence that apply during trial. But the rules are procedural. They're enacted by the Supreme Court. There are different Supreme Court committees that make recommendations to the court with respect to rule changes. I had the fortune of being on the Family Practice Rule Committee for many, many years. In fact, I was vice chair. And the rules that come out of the committees and then are recommended and the court decides which ones to adopt, this really makes procedural things much more efficient in New Jersey than in many states. It's really a very good system, excellent system, actually. But in this case, what the court said, this is a criminal case, and said that the plain reading of this rule, 3:13-3, paren bn, paren, paren 2, and paren, paren c, and paren, requires production of witness statements only if those statements have already been reduced to writing. So it said that nothing in the rules precludes a trial court from ordering a defendant to designate witnesses as either character witnesses or fact witnesses. However, the court encouraged, and this is a Supreme Court case, encourages practitioners to participate in cooperative discovery in order to ease the burden on all parties involved. So that is a rule, and it says that witness statements don't have to be produced unless they're have already been reduced to writing. Now, there's a healthcare, rather lengthy healthcare case where this was the United States of America versus Gerasimos Petratos, and it was the Third Circuit, and he appealed from a dismissal of his quatam action arising under the False Claims Act, which alleged that his former employer, Genentech, suppressed data that caused doctors to incorrectly certify that Avastin, which is an FDA-certified cancer treatment, was reasonable and necessary for certain at-risk Medicare patients. Specifically, he alleged that Genentech ignored and suppressed data that showed that Avastin's side effects for certain patients were more common and severe than reported, and which would have required Genentech to file adverse event reports that might have required a change to the FDA label on the drug. And he asserted that Genentech suppressed the data to mitigate business risk, and that when he tried to bring safety risks to the attention of upper management, he was told to stop further work and had his job threatened, quote, threatened. And he claimed then that if Avastin's true risks were disclosed, physicians would have prescribed Medicare patients lower doses of the drug or would not have prescribed it at all. And the district court dismissed his complaint as fatally deficient, reasoning that medically accepted as reasonable and necessary was a determination made by Medicare, not by physicians, as alleged by Mr. Petratos. On appeal, the court disagreed with the district court's interpretation of the Medicare statute, holding that the district court said that the separate medically accepted and reasonable and necessary requirements that they were not correct in the way they decided that. And the court agreed that the United States, on appeal, the court agreed that the United States, that the reasonable and necessary determination process was made by the FDA, Medicare, and individual physicians. And since the determination had to be made for each individual patient, however, the court affirmed the dismissal of the complaint on other grounds, concluding that his complaint could not establish materiality or tending to influence payment or receipt of money. Instead, the court found, and this is, you know, this is what, you know, happens sometimes in lawsuits, that his allegations to assert, quote, minor or insubstantial, end quote, compliance. So, you know, they agreed with him, but then didn't agree with him in the end. So, and there will be no second chance for Dismiss False Claims Act case pursued by a whistleblower, and that was this gentleman that I was just mentioning, and numerous government entities alleging the maker of Atovastatin suppressed data about the cancer drug. And that's what the Federal Appeals Court decided, so that the U.S. and this whistleblower lost. Now, you know, hopefully lots of people who are taking that drug have heard about the lawsuit and will be questioning their physicians as to whether or not it's still an appropriate drug for them to take. Now, again, a federal judge has dismissed a putative law action lawsuit against Hertz Global Holdings by its shareholders, and this time with prejudice, finding no evidence to demonstrate the company knowingly hid financial problems in order to boost the price of its stock. So that seems to be over. Now, apparently, well, there's someone's conviction on Medicare fraud charges apparently is unlikely to alter the landscape in the corruption case against U.S. Senator Robert Menendez, according to legal commentaries. I really don't know enough about that to even comment, other than the fact that they don't expect that the conviction of this one man is going to have any real effect. Now there's a rather tragic case of a New York Court of Appeals judge and questions about her death and whether or not judges feel free to get mental health if they're experiencing mental health problems, whether they feel their ability to get treatment or whether they're concerned about that. Anyway, this was a rather tragic situation where a judge in New York apparently committed suicide. And so what else is happening? Well, there was another appeal involving, this was a challenge to the validity of a regulation adopted in 2015 by the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, And that regulation, the department defines for the first time in codified form the concept of simple misconduct by an employee that can limit his or her eligibility for unemployment benefits. So this is a significant case for anyone who is filing for unemployment benefits. And the question is, the department adopted the regulation in an attempt to respond to concerns this court, meaning the I'm trying to remember which court this was, if this was a an appellate court or the Supreme Court. But in any event, I think it was the appellate division in this case, because the regulations were put in place because of concerns that the appellate division expressed in a case called Silver versus the Board of Review regarding the need for a codified rule that distinguishes, quote, simple misconduct, end quote, from more stringent intermediate concept of, quote, severe conduct, end quote, as defined by the legislature in a 2010 amendment to the statute, or the most extreme category of, quote, gross misconduct, end quote, defined in the statute. Now, the court invalidates the portion of the challenged regulation defining simple misconduct. And it did so because the definition illogically and confusingly mixes concepts of, quote, negligence, end quote, with intent-based concepts such as willful disregard or evil design or wrongful intent and similar states of mind. So the regulation is also flawed because it defines, quote, simple misconduct, end quote, in certain respects as encompassing employee conduct that is at least as extreme or perhaps more so than, quote, severe misconduct, end quote. So consequently, the department's final agency action adopting a definition of simple misconduct is reversed as arbitrary and capricious, without prejudice to the department pursuing the adoption of a substitute regulation that cures these defects and conforms to the overall statutory scheme. So in other words, you need to do a do-over and get it right, and especially apparently in this case, simple misconduct, could be more than serious misconduct. And what it boils down to is if someone is fired for misconduct, should they get unemployment benefits? Now, most of us as employers would say, well, of course not. That doesn't make any sense. If someone if it's serious misconduct, you know, any employer should be able to fire someone and not have to pay unemployment benefits. So that's the issue, because when someone resigns of their own free will, the employer is not on the hook for unemployment. When an employer fires someone, they are on the hook and to pay benefits. And this is always a real problem, because I think from employer standpoints, I know I certainly have had a couple cases where I felt that the employee should not be paid or should not be entitled to unemployment compensation. And in one case, I found out that my employee, had been terminated by her prior employer for embezzlement. Well, and was about to be indicted for embezzlement. Well, of course, I could not have someone like that working for me in light of all the confidential information, financial information I have about clients. So when I asked her to resign, she refused. So I had no alternative but to fire her. And I won't go into the rest of it. Ultimately, I think they would have given her unemployment benefits, but it turned out that she had not worked for me long enough, so she would have been collecting under her prior employer, the one she embezzled from. So then she was not entitled to unemployment benefits. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today, and we'll play the news and then be back with the sports guys. I hope you stay tuned and talk to you next week. If it's Friday at 4, it's the law.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at